This is episode 389 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, June the 18th, 2012.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
This is an exciting day in the history of the NBN.
Copyright.gov is down. FBI.gov is next to go.
The world is in trouble. There is no Wikipedia.
Who here has an iPhone? Who here has a BlackBerry? Who here uses Gmail? Well, you're all screwed.
So we'll be monitoring this very closely. No one will pay for these rights if they can't find a way to make money off them.
Copyright is such a big issue. Legislation as 2006 is already outdated by the new technologies.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb, and what a week it's been. On the show today, Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference talked up iOS 6, so we'll take you through the changes in Apple's next mobile operating system scheduled for release in our spring. iOS 6 brings a slew of new features such as improved maps and Siri functionality, changes to iCloud and Safari, and new Facebook and Twitter integration. And it's compatible with most of Apple's current gadgets. Also, IBM have released a comprehensive report into Australia's digital future, which is not only an eye-opener in how Australians will use technology as we head towards 2050, but a reality check for 16 industry sectors facing extinction in the next few years. Skype are going to throw ads at us now, an Apple One computer went up for auction last week, and there's still rough times ahead for Nokia. Lena's in to talk gaming, Adam looks at Samsung, HTC and Apple smartphones, and don't forget the usual OddSpot gadget app and website of the week. What a show! First up though, here's this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio News Desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, a report predicts the end of newspapers, television and radio by 2050. Centrelink asks eBay to reveal the identity of 15,000 power sellers. Apple announces iOS 6 at its Worldwide Developer Conference. Skype introduces ads in its free voice over IP service. And after a disappointing E3, rumour and speculation about the successor to Microsoft's Xbox 360. Welcome to Tech Talk News. A new report commissioned by IBM has revealed business from high-speed broadband will generate $1 trillion in revenue by the year 2050. The report by market research firm Ibis World, entitled A Snapshot of Australia's Digital Future to 2050, also says the fledgling National Broadband Network will bring an end to newspapers, television and radio. Ibis World describes the NBN in Australia as the new utility, comparing it to having water, electricity, gas and telephone services connected to every home. The report goes on to say that high-speed broadband in Australia will facilitate the creation of new products and new industries, and as always, it will benefit individuals and households. The author of the report is the founder and chairman of Ibis World, Mr. Phil Ruthven. On ABC Radio, Mr. Ruthven explained that the writing was now on the wall for newspapers and radio and television networks.
Well, I think many of them have been on a migration trip. I mean, for example, things like newspapers and magazines, and one's only got to look at both, say, News Limited and Fairfax to see how desperately they've been trying to get into the electronic media or online databases. And it's a real race because the rate at which consumption of print media has been declining has been somewhat greater than their ability to migrate to the new media.
Mr. Ruthven predicts that by 2050, Australian consumers will need a monthly data allowance of more than 100,000 gigabytes. In an effort to crack down on welfare fraud, the government agency Centrelink has asked eBay to reveal the identity of some 15,000 users. Centrelink says the so-called power sellers all sold goods in excess of $20,000 last year, and some may be unlawfully receiving Centrelink benefits. Here's Centrelink's general manager, Mr. Hank Yongan, on ABC Radio.
The rapid growth of online trading forums such as eBay has created opportunities for people to earn incomes without declining declaring them to Centrelink. What this pilot aims to do is to identify people receiving Centrelink payments who may be operating organised businesses in the online cash economy in order to hide their profits.
A spokesperson for eBay, Ms. Sandy Kolkoff, confirmed the online auction site had received a request from the Australian Taxation Office and the Department of Human Resources for information relating to members of the site who had sales greater than $20,000 in any given financial year. Ms. Kolkoff on ABC Radio.
eBay will always cooperate with law enforcement inquiries where necessary in any connection with an investigation, whether it's around tax or fraud or any other issue.
But the chair of the Australian Privacy Foundation, Mr. Chris Connolly, said a lack of formal data sharing agreements between eBay and Centrelink was cause for concern. Similarly, the president of the Australian Council for Civil Liberties, Mr. Terry O'Gorman, said the privacy downside of the request was simply unacceptable. The government, however, said it intended to increase surveillance of online trading if this initiative proved successful in the detection of welfare fraud. Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference was held in San Francisco last week. In addition to a new mobile operating system, iOS 6, announcements included a new MacBook Pro with Retina display, Apple's own version of Maps, and the Siri voice-enabled assistant to be made available on Apple's next incarnation of the iPad. The iOS 6 operating system for iPhones and iPads was released in beta and includes Passbook, a new e-ticketing application, an improved phone application, a new Safari web browser with Instapaper style offline reading, as well as improvements to mail and photo sharing. In good news for FaceTime users, Apple announced the removal of the Wi-Fi only restriction, so video calling would be made available from one Apple device to another over mobile data networks. Apple also said it had integrated support for Facebook deeper into the operating system, allowing Siri users to post photos to Facebook with just voice commands. There were no announcements made about the iPhone 5 or an Apple television. Long-time VoIP player Skype has introduced on-screen advertisements into its free calls. Skype refers to these as conversation ads, and they'll appear in calling windows of users who don't pay a Skype subscription or who don't have Skype account credits. A spokesperson said the company was excited to introduce conversation ads as an opportunity for marketers to reach hundreds of millions of connected users. Skype users can make low-cost or free telephone calls over the internet using computers or smartphones. Skype has always offered a free point-to-point telephony service and only charged users for connecting into local telephone networks. And the gaming world is in a frenzy after a document allegedly leaked from Microsoft roadmaps the next generation Xbox console, the 720. The 56-page document dates back to August 2010, although a number of things mentioned have since become a reality, including smart glass technology, which lets players send video from tablets or phones to TVs, as well as a Metro dashboard and Xbox TV apps. If the document's to be believed, proposed improvements in the Xbox 720 include cloud-based entertainment, native 3D, integrated Kinect version 2, augmented reality Fortaleza glasses, and scalable hardware, all by 2015. Microsoft made no announcement about the future of its Xbox games console at last week's E3 video game conference in Los Angeles. Popular gadget blog Slashgear says the biggest piece of information from the allegedly authentic document is that the Xbox 720 will launch at just $299. I'm Dr. Rom, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Vodafone is unveiling its 100 gigabyte shared data bucket.
Oh, good. Glad I'm not crazy.
Yeah, you're in 3 meg like a lot of people.
It's not something that business is going to go, hey, this is for us.
You said it was, you inferred that it was because I'm a dumb Mac user.
If I said that, yep. I was wrong.
Andrew, you're lucky.
Why am I lucky?
You don't have a Facebook account.
No, I don't have a Facebook account. I used to have one.
Done well.
You're saying I was a good time traveller. Is that working for
you,
Dr. Rod?
You're doing an excellent job.
Now, they're obviously not going to replace your major utility providers.
If you look in the television and you've got your Move controller...
Having said that...
The start screen still looks just like Windows Phone 7.
You still haven't got that fixed for it.
No.
Don't call me Linda,
now you've
please.
Pointed that out, we should move on.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a very interesting Tech Talk Radio this evening. Lots has been happening since we last were in your earpod thingies or on your speakers or in the car as you drive around. I'm Andrew McComb. We've got a full contingency of panelists this evening. From camera right to left is Dr. Graham. Hello, Graham.
Hello, Dr. Andrew.
Yes. Dr. Lena sitting over there, otherwise known as Linda.
No, not okay. Otherwise known as Linda.
Sorry, I've had emails to that effect this week too, I see.
Yep.
There's people out there trying to wind you up, I suspect. And they're, yes. And Ron, hello.
Hey, Dr. Andrew, how are you going? I've been defrocked.
You have been defrocked. Oh, you've been exposed.
Well, yeah.
We always knew where you came, got that doctorate from.
It's happened to the best of us.
Hasn't it? Yeah. Indeed. Yeah. Anyway.
I've been undoctored
as opposed to being doctored.
Yeah.
How are you this week?
Oh, look, good, exciting, well, tumultuous times, really, with the revelation last week of Australia's digital future.
Bad day to give up coffee drinking in the tech world.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, started rolling in at 9 o'clock this morning and didn't stop.
Absolutely. Yep. We'll go through this document later on in the show after we've got through the Coro and the Fairfax shenanigans and a few interesting things that happened in Parliament today. But having said that, yes, it predicted the demise of a lot of 16 core industries, which we will go through. One of which happened today.
Whoa.
Which was the demise of a newspaper, as we know. Well, not the demise,
I was about to say.
It shrank down in size. It's instead of this big, good for radio, holding both arms out, it's now this big, about half the size of what it was, physically speaking, and a lot of it's going to go online.
So is this report the Oracle now?
Well, so far it's done pretty good. So we'll talk about that later on in the show as well. Also tonight, other interesting news with PayPal, other interesting news about Skype, and all sorts of things happening. Another one which I thought which was really quite good is how to get cash out of your ATM without using your PIN number.
Oh.
Yeah, I saw that. That was interesting.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Using something which we'll talk about later.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got to stick around and listen. It is a tease. Speaking of teasers, you want to give a bit of a side insight into some of the stuff at the end of the program, Dr. Ron?
We've got some great stuff through the entire program, but towards the end, good gadgets, websites, odd spots.
It's the cringeable end of the program. You've got to stick around for it and everyone goes, Dr. Ron.
You've had your hand in this week's odd spot.
I have.
You've also had your hand in this week's website?
I'm glad you read the rundowns.
Oh, I do.
I didn't print them to bring them in because no one's asked for them.
I was just looking around a little bit lost then. But
are we?
No,
don't be lost.
You can throw them to us in the one and only break that we're going to have on this week.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of talking tonight. All right, well, let's not wait for anything. Let's get the ball rolling with the first segment up for tonight, correspondence that needs to be tabled, Dr. Ron.
Your say on Tech Talk Radio.
And try and keep them down a little bit tonight because we've got tons to get through.
Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is how to communicate with the panel. Freak via the contact form says, "Hi guys, I was listening to your show and was shocked to hear that Lena referred to Helena Bonham Carter as Johnny Depp's wife." I don't think you did.
I didn't.
It might have sounded that way.
Helena Bonham Carter is Tim Burton's wife, and we were talking about Tim Burton movies.
Yeah,
he's
the maker
casts
of the new film, which has Johnny Depp as the lead role Barnabas.
That's it. Tim Burton always likes to cast these two in most of his movies, says Freak, for some strange reason.
Because he's married to one of them.
That's
one of the strange reasons.
But they are definitely not married, nor have ever been in any form of relationship.
Is that nepotism?
Have not now or any ever been in any form. Or any part.
No, I know.
Professional or personal.
No, I know. I know. I must have misspoke. I must have said the words around the wrong way.
I thought you said
it all
the right
time.
Way, but then, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I heard it the way our listener heard it, though. So I must admit I wondered at the time but didn't know any better.
But that's the case of brain going faster than mouth.
Yes.
I think
I've
it's
done
just
that
a case
numerous
of
occasions.
She mentioned several names and then said he is... or
His wife,
or something like that, and it wasn't clear which he was being referred to.
We had pronoun problems.
We did.
Freak.
Story of my life.
Freak, you've picked us up on that one there. That's okay. Thanks for the feedback. Peter via the contact form says, "Hi, team." Hi, Peter.
Hi, Peter.
"The perils of not listening live. There I am out walking, listening to this week's podcast version, and Graham makes the comment about M5 Industries to the accompaniment of crickets chirping."
Yes, no one understood what I meant.
No, I didn't get the reference at all. "It took all my self-control to stop me yelling, 'Mythbusters!' Oh, and I cannot believe there was no response from the chat room." I think there was actually, Peter, but
there was eventually, there was. Yeah,
but we...
But I had to Google it.
Is that what it was?
No, I don't.
If Graham cleared it up by the end of the broadcast, that didn't make it into the podcast. Straight through to the keeper, Graham.
No, I didn't clear it up. I left it as an exercise for the listener, but now you've got let the cat out of the bag. Yeah, what happened was that Jamie was looking for a name for his workshop. Adam suggested M5, thinking it was very cool, being the name of the UK spy agency that James Bond works for, which is in fact not even what he was thinking of was MI5, which was still wrong because James Bond works for MI6.
Yeah,
but yes, and he left the I out and he got the five, which is the internal spies instead of MI6, which is the external spies.
I'm noticing a pattern of pedantry.
Pedantry.
Our listeners are sticklers for detail.
Tech talk pedantry. I like that. You've got the emphasis on the wrong syllable.
Yeah, pedantry.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, Peter.
Ploughing on irregardless. Steph, via the Tech Talk Radio contact form, says, "Hi, guys. Thought you may like Kogan's new plans to rid the world of old Internet Explorer browsers.
Yes.
What a great idea. Love the show. Regards, Steph." Thanks, Steph. Steph has put a link there to the Kogan website that says, "Today at Kogan, we've implemented the world's first Internet Explorer 7 tax."
Yay!
"The new 6.8% tax comes into effect today on all products purchased from Kogan.com by anyone still insistent on using the antique browser. Don't worry, unlike other taxes, we make this easy to get around with a simple upgrade away from IE7. The way we've been able to keep our prices so low," says Kogan, "is by using technology to make our business efficient and streamlined. One of the things that stops us doing this is our web team having to spend a lot of time making our website look normal on IE7. This is an old browser. From today, anyone buying from the site using IE7 will be lumped with a 6.8% surcharge. That's 0.1% for each month IE7 has been on the market."
Aww.
"I didn't know whether that was a really good idea or a really bad idea. I've thought about it a bit."
Someone, I can't remember who said that they went to it. Was it might have been you, Graham. I can't remember. Went there on IE6 and the tax doesn't apply.
That's what I was just about to try. I've just started up my Windows XP VM here to see.
Graham, should we be trying to make the internet a better place? And there's no question that that's what Kogan's trying to do. Or should the internet be a place where we should be able to use anything we want?
No,
we should
no.
Should be, you know, technology
agnostic?
Yeah, independence.
Well, yes and no, but in this case, using IE6 on the public internet is downright dangerous.
It is.
So people should be encouraged to move off it, and I think, or IE7 in this case. I think this is to be applauded. I think that's it's brave because it'll annoy customers who can't upgrade or don't want to upgrade or whatever.
It'll corporate more than customers, annoy them, but it'll financially punish them.
Well, or they just won't buy from him.
Hmm.
So I think it's a little bit brave in that regard, but I think it is a step in the right direction, and more people should do it.
Can I say this made news globally, what Kogan did? I remember reading about it on the BBC website during the course of the week. So it made waves. Maybe he bought the PR that he wanted from it. Let's spin it round the other way, shall we?
If nothing else, it's going to get people talking about
exactly.
it. And you'll get people who don't know any better who see this warning saying, "Hey, you're getting pinged with an IE7 tax," and they'll speak to their computer people and say, "What does this mean?"
Maybe I'm going to have to update the Tech Talk Radio website now so that instead of the go away, don't bother us and get a real browser on IE6, we'll have to extend that to IE7.
Potentially.
Potentially.
Because that's what it says if you go to our website on IE6.
I think so. I haven't been there for a while. I think it's there.
Steph, thank you very much
bringing
that to our attention. Power Mac via the contact form says, "Hey, gang. Great show. Love your work. Keep it up." Thanks, Power Mac. "As an avid Mac user, I wanted to let all those Mac listeners out there know about a catastrophic issue they might come across if they download the Apple software update dated 11th of June 2012. It came straight after the WWDC in San Francisco. In particular, it has to do with Thunderbolt's update, the high-speed port that sits idle waiting for peripherals." I did a little bit of research after we got this from Power Mac. There's a lot of blogs talking about this. MacNN blog says, "Some people are experiencing serious errors with Thunderbolt Software Update 1.2. Affected users will see any number of issues when booting a Mac, ranging from unexpected error messages to kernel panics or becoming stuck
What's
at the grey
panic?
Boot screen."
Is that when the Colonel Sanders comes after you with a bucket of chicken?
No.
Oh.
That's
it's when the most fundamental software running on the computer, the core of the core of the operating system, can't figure out what to do next and stops.
Oh, is that the blue screen of death?
It
generates one.
Yes, it's the Linux Unixy world equivalent of a blue screen of death. That's
okay,
right.
Cool.
And that then of course that now includes the Mac world.
PowerMax says the good news is you will lose nothing but time. You keep everything if this happens. Only the operating system needs to be reinstalled over top of the faulty operating system. You don't need a disk to do it either. You can hold down Command plus R after booting up, and then reinstall OS X via the internet with your Apple ID. If you have Time Machine, now I do, that too will work. This is my fix based on 10.7 Tiger. So if you've experienced that, then let us know. Send us an email and let us know how you resolved it, if that is an issue or if Apple's looking at it. But there is a lot of discussion about it, actually. It wasn't just PowerMac that's...
Oh, so it really wasn't oops on
behalf
of Apple's.
Yeah, that's had a one-off issue, yeah. Forest Lake, via the contact form, says, "Hey there, lady and gentlemen."
Hey, I'm first.
Life is like
it's normally
a box
guys
of chocolates.
And gal.
It is.
And this one, I was first. That's
are,
nice.
Are you happy if people say, "Hey, guys"?
Yeah, I'm fine
is
with
guys
that.
All inclusive?
Yeah, I'm fine
I've
with that.
Collective
guys.
Noun
guys
of people.
These days is gender neutral. Yeah. I absolutely, completely
unless concur. Someone has a problem with it, and then that's they're allowed to have a problem with it if they don't like it. But I personally don't have a problem with it, so go nuts.
Go crazy.
A lot of my friends call me bro and dude, so
sup, bro?
It really doesn't bother me.
I was reading your tweets yesterday. You did go nuts.
Yeah. I've had bees in my bonnet lately.
Just wanted to have my say on KeePass. Remember Phil sent us some
Yeah,
some
this
feedback.
Is where you store your all the plethora of passwords that you gather in today's modern online world.
KeePass is spelt K-E-E-Pass, if you wanted to have a look. And from memory, it was .com. Info, I think. Can someone just quickly
just Google
punch it a web browser? Yeah. I've been using it, I believe, since it pretty much started. Over the years, I've used several other password managers.
Keypass.info is right.
Thanks, yeah, Graham.
He beat me. I was nearly there.
I've used several other password managers, but keep coming back to KeePass. I love it as I carry the key to decrypt the database in my head. I have the KeePass program on every device I own, Windows, Ubuntu, USB key, and Android. The data file is backed up in the cloud and on every device, so there's no way of losing it. If I do lose it, it's solely my fault. I cannot get hacked, as they cannot decrypt the database.
Yet.
It is available on every platform. I have control over it. Why would I trust something like LastPass when everything is stored on my machine and they have access to it? Cheers, Forrest. Thanks, Forrest.
All of these systems for making things more convenient in a security sense always carry a danger of making them less secure. Security is always a fight against convenience.
It is. It's always a trade-off of accessibility and convenience versus... Yep.
And the risk with... KeePass seems to be a particularly good one. I did a little bit of reading on it. There doesn't seem to be any, but it's one security flaw away from being open to everybody. Do you know what I mean? It's only got to have one really smart guy realize, oh, hey, I can do that. And bang.
You got everything. Yep. ATC, a Telstra colleague via email, says... Last week, a vacant house in Somerton in northern New South Wales was destroyed by fire. Aww. The intense heat from the blaze caused major damage to Telstra's telephone exchange.
Oh, was it next door, was it?
It was next door, affecting around 270 fixed phone lines and some mobile and ADSL services.
Meltdown, huh?
Telstra deployed a mobile exchange on wheels, a meow.
Meow.
To get services back on air. Here's a link to the news article. Cheers, ATC. He's popped a link there to the Northern Daily Leader, so I'll pop that in the show notes. But it's interesting Telstra were able to get a mobile device out there fairly fast and get those services back up on air.
Well done, Telstra.
Good. Good work, Telstra.
That must have been hot. Because aren't most exchanges just brick boxes?
Could have been. Bit of Besser brick with a double insulation there.
Look at the photos. Some of them are just tin.
Yeah. Must have been one of those ones.
Renegade Fruit Loop, via the contact form, says...
Why do our correspondents have such unique names?
Hey, Fruit Loop. We haven't heard from the Fruit Loop for a while. Yeah. Just got back from
He's
the
been
UK.
Been on holidays, hasn't he?
Oh, that'll be why.
Yeah, I think it's a she. I think Renegade's a lady friend.
Sorry. I think. Anxiety.
Just got back from the UK a couple of weeks ago, and I've been catching up on the backlog of TTR podcasts. Sorry that Google Maps is so janky. Is that right? Is that a word?
That's a good word. I've never heard that before.
Sorry Google Maps is so janky on iDevices, but I have to say it worked a treat on the fiancé's Samsung. It was our first overseas trip where we had data connectivity on our mobiles. Given that renting a GPS through the car hire company would have set us back at least £10 to £15 a day, the local prepaid SIM card was well worth the £15 we paid for it. Google Navigation got us around England and Wales with ease. There were only some remote parts of Scotland where we ran into trouble because the data cut out. So a tip for those who want to use their phone GPS in remote parts, make sure your accommodation has Wi-Fi so you can download your driving route before you set out. Love the show, and the TV pilot looks pretty good too. Cheers. Shh. Oh, sorry, I was supposed to read that bit out.
Finished.
It's finished. Now. Let it edit that out, Graham.
I think it's still there.
P.S. note to Graham.
Uh-oh.
The reason Pinterest hasn't been mentioned in earlier shows is because the panel does not include any girls who are planning their wedding.
Oh,
now, I went to Pinterest and
is that what it's for?
I saw bridal gowns and ads for things like that.
Yeah.
Okay. There's only one girl in the studio and she's well and truly tied the knot.
Yep.
Move on.
5 whole years ago.
Wow. Mm. It's lasted that long. Short of jail terms. That's what I kept telling my wife.
Newbie via the contact form says, "Hey, Tech Talk Radio Tech Talkers, just nice. A small comment. Yeah, whilst I briefly take a 5-minute break from exam study. When the new Apple stuff was announced, I was absolutely salivating when I saw the new MacBook Pro."
Oh, with the extra screen, the retina.
Yeah.
It does look very nice.
"Spent a solid half hour with my mouth wide open as I remained amazed at the awesomeness of the MacBook on Apple's website. Then I clicked the specs page and then I saw the price. Then I went back to studying. Sigh."
Study harder. And you'll get one.
Newbie.
That's why it's in the threes. It's very pricey.
"Still," he says, "retina display on a laptop and up to 800 gigabytes SSD." Mm. Damn, that makes me jealous. From Lewis. MacBook Pro with retina display on the Apple's website. RRP 2500.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there you go.
I don't think that's unreasonable.
I don't think it is. Especially when you consider all the programs that come with it. It's not just the hardware, it's the software as well. And if you were to buy, say, iMovie, GarageBand and something else on Windows and a Windows laptop, you'd be looking at probably around the same price.
You have
anyway.
To buy the PC, the operating system. You have to buy
and Windows as well, which is really expensive.
Yep.
Yeah, compared to the Lions and the Cats.
So it's much of a muchness, really, when you think about it. When
someone was saying in the chat, package. There's an albino jungle cat out there, Marky Mark, 10.8.
No.
I don't know what's going on in our chat tonight.
That's
having
mountain lion.
Yeah, I know. And he's talking about albino jungle cats as 10.8. Oh, they've gone mad.
Andrew, last but certainly not least, Damo the pilot.
As opposed to Damo the geek, our regular correspondent.
Yes. Different Damo. "Hi panel, long-time listener, first-time feedbacker. Great show, I hang out for it each week." Thanks, Damo. Just a quick
suggestion.
Does
he listen to us while he's flying, though?
Yeah, probably. "A quick suggestion for Lena. Ooh. Rather than $80 for TomTom on iPhone, mm-hmm. I use MetroView for about $20.
Is this for flying?
Yeah, it's for aeronautical navigation. Andrew.
Don't tweet as you land.
You turn
either.
Off your NDB equipment and your VOR equipment and you stoke up MetroView. You can even do the Google search in the app and it'll give you results that you can then navigate to. Also, it downloads the Australia map on install, so you're not using your data on the fly, get it?
So you got it in aircraft mode.
"And gives turn-by-turn instruction, although its pronunciation of some street names is quite amusing."
Amusing? Well, it's ridiculous, I would have thought.
Cheers, Damo the pilot, not Damo
Thanks,
the geek,
Damo.
He says. To our correspondents, Andrew, feedback at techtalkradio.com.au.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Yes, and as we mentioned earlier on in the show, technological sort of advances in the newspaper industry have seen the demise of certain newspapers. Well, on the way out anyway. Highlighted in a report this week, which we'll touch on very shortly, Australia's digital future to 2050. Some very interesting reading. So if you've got young kids, this is what's going to affect them. But it's all about the internet and the likes too. Anyway, Dr. Ron Fairfax decided that it was no longer going to do the the broadsheet newspaper that it currently does, which is the Sydney Morning Herald and the Melbourne Age, big newspapers.
Yeah, that's it. Let's paint the picture. During the week, a new report was commissioned by IBM and produced by the international market research firm Ibis World, a snapshot of Australia's digital future to 2050, and you just so happen to have a hard copy of that to your right.
I did.
Yeah. Lo and behold, one of the things which this report predicted was, look, newspapers will be defunct by 2050 and TV and radio will not be as we know them today. Lo and behold, we turn our computers on this morning and we have news that Fairfax is going to shed
1,900 jobs over 3 years.
Which is incredible. So almost half its journalistic workforce. Fairfax is going to close 2 printing plants. They're going to erect online paywalls around their, what are currently free news sites, even though you have advertisements that start playing to you, but they are free. It's also going to trim its broadsheets to what it says is some unspecified compact format.
What do you mean unspecified? I think they did specify, didn't they? Didn't they say it was going to be like the Herald Sun in Melbourne, and I'm not sure what the equivalents are in other areas?
Well, that's what we're presuming it's going to be like. I think they just said it was going to be a compact format.
I was listening to the CEO of Fairfax, Greg Highwood, on the radio this evening, And he was sort of saying that the online portion of what Fairfax is offering will continue to be there. What they're looking to do is to actually charge high volume users of the service to actually access it. So reading between the lines, chances are you're going to get, you know, just casual users, you'll notice no difference. But if you're a high volume user, read the newspaper from cover to cover, then chances are they're going to ping you for some form of subscription. None of this has been determined yet. As he was saying, they're still working on the business model, but things will happen. I think March next year is when they turn the presses off in Sydney and Melbourne for the big broadsheet that we have at the moment.
They also announced not so long ago that they're going to stop delivering the papers to parts of rural Australia because it wasn't economically viable for them.
That'd be right. I can understand that.
The irony, of course, being that it's going to be printed in...
It is.
You know, rural Australia, like they're going to close the plants in Tullamarine, is that right?
Yeah, Tullamarine, and there's one in Sydney, and I can't remember the name of the suburb, but I'm sure someone in the chat will tell me. There's a lot of Sydney people listening in the chat. Let's have a listen to Greg Highwood, and he's going to tell us why or what's going on and why they've done what they've done.
The Sydney Morning Herald and The Age will be moving to the user-friendly Australian Financial Review format size, with the new formats to be launched on Monday, the 4th of March, 2013. But while the size is changing, there will be no change to our commitment to independent journalism. I'm sure that most of you are aware that many quality mastheads around the world have moved to this format. The Times, The Independent, to name just two.
That was CEO Greg Hayward, the CEO of Fairfax, telling us a little bit about what's going to happen and why. One of the Sydney Morning Herald journalists and a unionist, Stuart Washington, had this to say.
People today have been reeling. We've been expecting some news, but I suppose the size of the announcement, 1,900 jobs over 3 years, has shocked people. And we're just trying to calculate how many journalists are inside those 1,900 people who are leaving Fairfax over the next 3 years. We are really working on the back of an envelope, but it could be up to a quarter of the journalists working on those publications.
Now, surely that's going to have some effect on the content within the newspaper, although management sort of haven't sort of confirmed or denied that. Dr. Ron, do you think this is really a global trend now with newspapers going this way?
I'm sure it is. This has been a long time coming. Like, Fairfax can't blame the emergence of the internet and all this on stuff in the last few years. You know, they've been struggling for 20 years or more. It's like we're saying, like trading, you know, the trade-off with security and stuff before. It's always been a trade-off for them of, you know, whether they're selling, you know, journalism or whether they're just selling advertising space. And look, ABC's...
Well, the fact of the matter is that one has always subsidised the other. They've used the proverbial rivers of gold from the classifieds to subsidise good journalism.
That's right, and it's a balance, and they've always struggled with that balance.
Yeah,
that balance.
Yeah. And the writing's been on the wall since that time. Look what happened to it. It went on to the Trading Post and stuff like that, then it went online, and all the newspapers have sort of given way to eBay and auction sites like that. So it was just the way it was going to go.
Look, the ABC's Jonathan Green wrote an article today for The Drum, which I thought was interesting. He said, "The sad truth for journalists in a commercial construct is that their department is exclusively a cost. It produces no revenue. Yes, it makes content, but the expense of doing that just drags on the gun arm of the business. In the commercial mind, journalistic content is either the plaster between the ads or something tailored specifically at attracting them. Because the business is not content, not journalism, the business is selling advertising." Mm. Now, you know, Jonathan Green was...
It was a cash cow too.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly. So he was ex-Fairfax, I think. Okay. There's another tweet as well by David Flynn, editor of the Australian Business Traveller. He was formerly a Sydney Morning Herald editor. "My 2 cents worth, future of the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age will be digital only for Monday to Friday, with print reserved for Saturday's
for the
weekend edition."
The bacon and egg brigade, where you sit down in the coffee shop and have a flick through.
Yeah, so interesting.
Yeah, I'd miss that.
Interesting forecast
I
there
do
from
read
a
that
former
paper.
Editor.
Yeah. Mm. Ben Ethan, Ethan with an M on the end of it, he's a writer for New Matilda website, which is a news and journalistic
Eltham.
Web.
Eltham. Ben Eltham.
Ben Eltham.
I think it is.
Okay, you're right. I'll take that as yes, Ben Eltham. Yep. For New Matilda website, he had this to say.
"Newspapers are dying the world over, and Australia is unfortunately no exception.
while it's possible that a digital-only Fairfax may be able to survive into the future, the days of printed newspapers as bundles of news and advertising and other types of information are drawing to a close. New technologies have come and displaced those forms of information, and there really isn't any coming back, I don't think.
Absolutely. And of course, everyone's now turning to the National Broadband Network, having facilitated pretty much what happened today, except for some, which we'll hear about shortly. This is what Stephen Conroy, the Minister for Broadband Communications and the Digital Economy, had to say.
This is a change that is going to be permanent, and it's something that newspapers around the world are facing. And what you're going to see is more and more business decisions that they've got to look at how they're going to survive into the future.
And this is really where it's all heading. Everything's going online from short storefronts. We're going to see the demise of wholesalers in a lot of respects when it comes to retailing. And then moving into these industries, like you mentioned before, Dr. Ron, the television, the radio, the print and the press and all that, which we'll touch on very shortly. We're seeing wholesale shifts there away from traditional media. And this is just the start.
Mm. And you're seeing this in the industry in which you work as well, aren't
you? Oh, absolutely.
In the television production industry.
Yeah, currently free-to-air television, there's two models. There's station-funded programming and then there's sponsor-funded programming. Sponsors have seen the light and they're moving away from traditional television and media advertising, and they're now putting their money online, like sort of like what Fairfax are doing. They're trying to cut their costs by going online. And it's sort of it's where we're heading. It's where the whole industry is heading.
Mm.
Should we have a little bit of a look at the shenanigans that went on in Parliament today? Now, Graham, you're across this. You drew my attention to this.
Yeah, this was a really, really interesting grab from the Senate this afternoon.
Now, who's Senator Brandis?
Leader of the opposition in the Senate, I think, is a senator from Queensland.
Okay. We have a carbon tax, which is about to sort of...
Deputy Leader of the Opposition in the Senate.
Okay. So, fairly high up in party ranks. And as all good political people do, they like to spin it a little bit. And this is what happened in the embarrassing shenanigans that is Australian Parliament. I don't know who pays their bills, but obviously I think we do. But this is what was said.
Is the Minister aware that every significant stage of the Fairfax production chain, from the cost of power to produce newsprint, to the cost of fuel to transport that newsprint, to the cost of electricity to operate the printing plants, to the cost of distribution, will be directly affected by the carbon tax?
Order.
Does the
Order.
Minister accept Order. Any responsibility for the loss of yet thousands more Australian jobs as a direct result of this toxic tax based on a lie?
Have you ever heard of the internet?
And those last remarks,
heard of the internet.
Those last remarks there were from the Right Honourable Senator Stephen Conroy, on the other side of the chamber, saying, "Have you ever heard of the internet?" Now, it's a bit sad, really, that the opposition are blaming the demise of Fairfax on the carbon tax.
On the carbon tax.
It's a long go.
Is it what Senator Brandis was doing? I think that's what I heard.
Yeah, that's what he said. It's... one of the most extraordinary things I've heard anyone try to claim in recent times.
Yeah, so once again, Senator Conroy said this.
Have you ever heard of the internet?
Which is a very valid point, I would have thought. And Penny Wong, who was on the other side, she was...
To whom the question was addressed.
She was a bit hot under the collar, and just because we've got to give balance here, this is what she said.
If you really cared about the families, you wouldn't come into this chamber and disgracefully use people's commercial decisions, which will impact upon those families, for your political purposes. I think people who are worried about what is happening in their employment at Fairfax are not going to take too kindly to you rocking up into the Senate chamber and asking ridiculous questions in an attempt to link it to your carbon scare campaign.
Well, them's fighting words, aren't they?
Go Penny.
That ends our shenanigans for today.
Senator Wong being Minister for Finance. Tell me, a straw poll in the...
But in fact, on today, she was representing the Minister for Climate Change and Energy Efficiency. That's why the question was directed to her.
Oh. Straw poll in the studio. When's the last time you bought a newspaper?
Would it surprise you that I bought a newspaper on Thursday? I bought the Financial Review as I was getting on an aeroplane to go somewhere.
Okay.
Because you would normally do that, or is it just something to pass the time on the plane?
No, I just wanted to elbow the people next to me on the aeroplane while I read
you're the
new
one.
Paper.
You're one of those people.
Personal space invader.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's why you get the Financial Review, because it's small. See, that's why they're doing this.
I can't remember the last time I bought a newspaper.
Really? You've got animals, don't you? How do you mop up?
No, towel. not with newspapers.
Well,
not with the Financial Review, not with the Sydney Morning Herald, I'm here to tell you.
Yeah. No, use the local one that comes in the mailbox, free. Yeah.
The last subscription I had was to a Fairfax publication. It was in 2002.
There you go.
That's a long time. 10 years ago.
10 years ago. I can't remember the last time I watched free-to-air TV, probably weeks and weeks and weeks ago.
Funny you should mention that. Says he, flicking to the last page of nothing related to the report I've got on my table here. And yes, thanks to those people chatting in the comment. We haven't turned into question time. It was just quite humorous and just it goes to show what's going on out there. How often have you watched video content on the following devices in the past 30 days? This was a question asked by Nielsen, which are the people that do the TV rating surveys and stuff like that. Now, these are global responses. And I'm reading between the lines there that means people from all over the world, not just locally here in Australia.
Yep.
There were many responses in respect to time, like more than once a day, a few times a week, et cetera, et cetera. But the interesting results, which I thought, just because you said you don't watch much television, Dr. Ron, is video content watched on a television at home is still up there. It's 27%, but the second one, after that, 17%, which is have not watched television. So there's a real 50-50 balance sort of between in these survey responses about whether you watch television or you don't watch television. And a lot of people are actually now turning to watch video content on their computers. 32% of the biggest respondents said they watch TV on their computers, compared to 27% on their television.
They watch free-to-air television on their
computers?
They're
watching video content.
Video content on their computers.
Okay. Yeah, so whether it's free-to-air being a program broadcast at the time or something streaming, that's you can pick over that down the track. But I guess where we're looking at is that the...
And they're Australian figures.
No, global figures.
Global figures, okay.
The point of difference here is that we're starting to see the swing away from traditional mediums of watching on television, sitting down in front of the living room TV and watching telly. We're now consuming online.
Yeah, that 10 years ago, that figure might have been 3% or something much, much lower.
Yeah, yeah.
It was only hippies who didn't have TVs 10 years ago, and now it's the hipsters who don't have TVs.
Yeah.
That's it.
I agree.
Correct. Another big one was 21% of people more than once a day watch television on their mobile phone. Which was quite interesting to once
watch video content on their mobile phone.
Yes, yeah. Watch video content on their mobile phone. 18% of respondents was the top bracket group for computers at work. Yeah, it probably was YouTube or Vimeo.
On the mobile phone, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that was quite an interesting revelation that we've now turned. We're now starting to watch our media in other devices.
And read our news as well.
Yeah.
Anecdotally, I've mentioned a couple of times I've got a contact I speak to regularly in the United States, and I know that she watches even current TV shows using her Netflix account and watches on the computer because she can then watch the episode when she feels like watching it. And she just has the monthly subscription to Netflix, and away you go. You know, want the latest episode of whatever it happens to be, you just watch it now. It streams live.
That's the thing. Give the people what they want, when they want it, how they want it, or they'll bypass you.
Mm. And traditional media has not been listening to that.
Nope.
In a lot of respects.
And this is what happens. We don't have to do it the right way anymore. We can go around you. So just play along or move out of the way.
They will be bypassed. And it's happening now. If you'd like to follow along with us on this report, feel free if you visit the Tech Talk Radio website. That's techtalkradio.com.au. Down on the left-hand side, you'll see a big banner there which says a snapshot of Australia's digital future. It's a PDF. It's about 6 meg to download, so you can take that on board. Now, this report predicts that 10% of Australians or the 509 industry sectors within Australia account for 23% of the nation's revenue. And this new broadband will not function, or our economy won't function without this new utility. Now, it's time to look at this as a utility. No longer do we have gas and electricity. We now have gas, electricity, and internet. It really is becoming a utility. A further 23% of industry revenue will use it to drive step changes in their business. So we're looking to the future. We're going to try and embed this new technology into our day-to-day running of the business. The export of tourism alone in new technology matched the 2012 mineral exports, totaling around $175 billion by 2030. So look at where we are today with mineral exports out of Western Australia, and that's going to be matched, thanks to the loves of the internet,
by tourism. Yeah.
In this report. So at the moment, we're in an age, you've heard of the Industrial Revolution, no doubt, from 1750 to 1850 or thereabouts, that 100 years. That particular revolution took place in 100 years. This revolution is taking place in tens of years, which is why at the moment you go out there and you go, oh, things are moving very quickly at the moment, aren't they? And this is why we're starting to see this technological revolution really push ahead in leaps and bounds. I've never heard of it, though, as the Infotronics Age. Have you ever heard of it called the current Infotronics Age?
Oh. Has that got a TM behind it?
No, it hasn't. It hasn't. It's just what they're calling it in this report.
Someone should TM that fairly quickly.
Yeah, very good.
Get on it. Get on it.
Dear, now, one other interesting notation, or there are many, but a couple were the standout ones. Future internet bandwidth, which is going to be required by the Australian consumer or households in Australia.
Lots and lots of gigapascals.
Yeah, ooh. Yeah absolutely. Yeah,
almost all of them.
All of them.
100,000 gigabytes a month.
Well, yes. The report suggests that by 2020, we will see massive increases in data usage right across the board, and Australians will consume a new monthly data allowance of almost 200 gigabytes by 2020, which is lots. Full video, I'd be guessing.
Yep.
And potentially 5 terabytes. That's 5,000 gigabytes by 2030. That's just, 17 years down the track, 18 years down the track. We're 2012 now. Not far off.
So that was five terabytes.
5 terabytes. So, 5,000 gigabytes by then, which if you look at 200 gigabytes, more than a tenfold increase in data.
Yeah, see, I've got 100 at the moment, and I think
100 what?
100 gigabytes, and I think, 150 gigabytes, and I think that's a lot. I can't hit that number at all. Like 75 peak and 75 off peak. It's probably similar to what a lot of people have.
Lynn, is your internet working again?
Yes.
Because you get really, really fast internet. Do you come near your...
I get super fast internet.
Yeah, faster than any of us. In fact, if you added all three of ours together, we probably still couldn't match your speed.
You would blitz it.
I would. Yeah. I'd blitz it. But it's
when it works.
Yeah, it can be patchy. Definitely can be patchy. I've come to love my Ethernet cable again.
Have you?
Because wirelessly, a bit patchy.
How's your data? What sort of plan are you on? And what do you download, if you don't mind me asking?
500 gig plan, I think.
Okay, so half a terabyte. Like
that. Yeah. Yeah.
Wowzers.
Like yeah. Well,
yeah, Dr. Ronnie doesn't use
internet. You've got that fast internet. You mow through it really quick. So.
You do. What do you do? What do you consume?
Legal things.
Things which definitely, are not illegal.
Definitely not illegal things. No, lots and lots of media. We don't watch much free-to-air telly. So we get lots of our download, lots of our media, stream a lot of our media, do all that kind of stuff.
Use a heap of a lot of social media.
Yep, a lot of social media, a lot of online gaming. Which because we have switched to Optus now, we don't have as much in the free zone as we did when we were with iiNet. There's a lot of stuff that I use. Say the Steam servers and all that were all in the free zone, and iView was on the free zone, and a few things didn't go towards my cap at my old provider, and they do now. So we got more gigs.
I think so. And you've got a young person growing up in your household.
Yes.
I have two.
Yep.
I'm sure that they will be large consumers of bandwidth as they grow up and do their assignments. And
YouTube and iView.
More so get the emails from their friends. Well, it won't be emails then. It'll be an IM or something like that through one of the social networks saying, hey, check this video out. And it'll be in HD and all that sort of stuff. And there goes the bandwidth type sort of stuff. But anyway, that won't be a problem very shortly.
Oh, good.
Now, the key benefits... Well, the key beneficiaries from this new report, there were several sectors that were actually highlighted as winners from the new technological revolution that we're currently going through.
Is it us?
Well, yes, it is us.
Tech commentators.
We're all winners.
Collectively speaking. Public administration and safety is the biggest winner out of the new bandwidth. Okay, super fast broadband analytics and advanced software programs will give us smarter, fast response emergency services, which will use predictive analytics to forecast and migrate the impact of natural disasters, along with many other innovations. Reading between the lines, does that mean weather forecasting is going to get better?
Sounds like it. Sounds like it, yeah.
So that's the biggest winner. Retail is the second one. Retail will continue its online revolution with eBay, Amazon, and other diverse product group providers.
So I would have thought that was number one. I would have thought retail would be head and shoulders above everything.
Yeah. Okay, well, it's number two. Number three, mining. Obviously,
will mining benefit?
Smart sensors in machines. So obviously the machines. Now, I know Mark, who's a semi-regular panelist, he was telling us about how the mining industry doesn't have people driving the trucks or the trains anymore.
Oh, true, yeah. So
mining industry is going to be a big beneficiary because I think...
fast, always-on, everywhere nature of the NBN will mean that... Okay,
yeah, and I think they've got sensors in railway tracks to determine the temperature of bogies as axles go across them so that if something's jammed up, they can go, hey, stop it, rather than...
A lot of that stuff's done on private networks at the moment. Yeah. So with the NBN, it'll become... I can see the industry would be...
So mining's going to be a big winner.
Be a big beneficiary. Yeah.
Number four, healthcare and social assistance. Obviously, there's a lot coming in that, especially for remote diagnostic purposes and stuff. And that's what
they've been... one of the big ones the government's always pushed as
absolutely
a benefit of the NBN.
Number five, professional scientific and technical services are going to take a big win out of it as well. Number six, educating and training people. And number seven, transport and... postal and warehousing, because obviously people are going to order stuff online, aren't they?
We're going to want to track the shipments.
We are, and the shipments need to come from
And we're going to have to ship the shipment.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's going to come from the manufacturer to the consumer, bypassing the wholesaler, and that's the next sort of phase of where things are going to go. The traditional storefronts,
maybe not, because manufacturers are not going to necessarily want to take on all that logistics. Logistics companies are going to
But they may be forced to, you know what I mean? With the changing, you've got to compete with what others are doing. And they might be dragged kicking and screaming into that type of mode. Also, you look at what they're shipping. If it's like a digital download, well, yeah, just click here and download. You don't have to get a disc or something.
I noticed on an Australia Post van.
People are always going to want things.
Yeah, they are.
Greedy people. On an Australia Post van on the side, it said AusPost driving online delivery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'd never noticed that before.
Yeah.
They've actually come out and said, yeah, it's all about online now. That's all we do is we make sure that we can help you online. Yep. No one sends letters. No one does any of that. But we'll get your online stuff to you.
Yeah.
All those things that are bought and sold on eBay, they've got to get from seller to buyer somehow.
Yep.
All right, now, here we go, the demises.
This is what I wanted to know, because there was... How many categories did the report say...
There are 16 categories.
...going to suffer?
Yep. Or 15, actually, should I say. 15 industry classes out of 509.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Which are going to, and I use their words, risk demise unless they reinvent themselves. For some, successful reinvention appears unlikely within the required time span.
They're going down.
Which is basically that, Liam. They're on their way down. Those industries which are flagged for demise are the following.
Mm-hmm.
Reproduction of recorded media, currently worth $0.2 billion to the Australian economy.
Stamping CDs and DVDs, in other words.
Books and magazine wholesaling, currently worth $1.5 billion.
Yep.
Entertainment media retailing, currently worth $1.1 billion.
Entertainment media retail. Okay, so selling DVDs and CDs. Yeah. Okay. Sorry, JB.
Here's the key one for today.
They'll be fine.
Newspaper publishing, currently worth $4.9 billion to the Australian economy.
Yeah.
Underneath that, magazine and other postal periodicals. Why would you want to wait for it for a magazine when you can get it online in high glossy things? And
instantly.
Yep.
Instantly and current and up to date.
Yep, as news breaks.
Software publishing, disc-based. So everything's going to come digitally down line, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
An interesting one here, motion picture exhibition, which I translate to being a cinema.
Yep, no.
Currently worth around about $1.9 billion to the Australian economy.
But is that the distribution of media for cinemas? Is that what that means?
Exhibition.
No, he said exhibition.
Exhibition. That's a screen.
Okay, for screening.
I don't think so.
I think that'll always stay.
Yep.
We'll always want to hang around with other people watching stuff.
It's a social thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And television was going to be the end of cinema as well. And cinemas has got better and better and bigger and
Yeah, it's cinema more changed, but it didn't go away.
Yeah.
No, it got better and bigger.
Unless you're talking about the independent cinemas.
Maybe.
Which might take a Yeah.
Aww. Also, what about the fact that we now have...
If you're in Melbourne, go down to the Astor, great cinema.
What if we now have home theatres which are of equivalent, if not better, sound?
Never going to happen.
Not
going to
happen. I'm okay. Not going to have a 4K machine in my house.
Not going to be.
No.
Not going to be that big. Sound's not going to be that good. No.
Yeah. You don't get an IMAX in your living room,
do
you?
Not for most people.
No.
You don't. No, and you don't get gold class in your... Yeah, I mean, I love going to the gold class cinema these days.
It's the experience, isn't it?
And they bring you a drink. And then they bring you another one.
Mm. At home, you've got to get your own drinks.
I'm not going anywhere near that. Now, following down the list, we're about halfway through one very near and dear to my heart, radio broadcasting, worth currently $1.4 billion to the Australian community.
They're going down. We're going down.
Radio is not going anywhere, let me tell you this.
But we're going down, the Oracle said.
No.
We're going down.
I'm just reading what's in front of me here.
A TV was going to kill radio as well.
Yeah.
I think radio is potentially going to move into a digital distribution. And I don't mean the dab stuff that you get now. It'll all come across the internet. We'll all be able to tune into this, like most of our listeners do now. They're listening to us on a stream.
Or podcasting.
You know, it's maybe radio will no longer be the point of origin. Maybe that's what they mean.
This is a complex debate, though. The issue of broadcasting in a literal sense, what a broadcast is, technically makes a lot of sense. It doesn't make sense to send individual streams to 100,000 listeners of the same thing, where at the moment radio, in a broadcasting sense, is you have one signal, and that is received by all of those people. You don't have to have 100,000 different radio signals to get to every receiver.
It's broadcasting versus narrowcasting.
Well, that's right. And narrowcasting is not efficient if you want it to do the job of broadcasting. Mm. That's why we have two different models.
Yeah, the thing I pull out of all this is local content. Local content is going to be delivered to you, and this is, we'll get to the other ones down the track. In fact, we'll go to the other ones now, then we'll come back to my point that I was going to make. Also, in the endangered species industry list, according to the report which we're currently going through right now, which is available if you go to the techtalkradio.com.au website, bottom left-hand side, you can't miss it, Australia's Digital Future to 2005. Book publishing. Well, there's a giver, isn't it?
I don't think that's quite what you meant.
Book publishing?
No. 2005.
2050. Thank you're you. Right, Graham. Sorry. I got my 5 and my 0 around the wrong way when I was reading the cover.
More
I'm dyslexic.
Pedantry.
Yeah, no, it's good. Anyway, book publishing's on the way out. Directory and mailing list publications and other publications except software, music and the internet, for obvious reasons, currently worth around $2.7 billion to the Australian economy. Here's the killer. Free-to-air television broadcasting, cable and other subscription broadcasting is dead in the water, currently worth $4.3 billion to the Australian economy.
Mm.
Now, I must admit, as we discussed, Dr. Ron, I concur with what you're saying. Advertising, which is the driving force behind these current technologies, is moving online.
Mm.
And without funding from advertising, things get a bit tricky. Take the Nine Network, for example, which I think we spoke about 2 years ago. Currently, CVC, or the venture capitalists, who... are running it.
Telstra.
Yeah, well, yeah. CVC need to pay back a few debts come February. $3.2 billion worth of debts. Let me tell you, there's a television network out there that ain't worth $3.2 billion. Especially after reports like this come out, for goodness me. So it's sad times for traditional broadcasters, but it will be replaced online with on-demand services and streaming services. And hopefully it'll have the bandwidth, which means we do get high definition. Those television sets we have bought will work really, really well, thanks to the high-speed internet, such as the National Broadband Network.
Well, they do work really, really well now, but free-to-air television, though, no.
Yeah. The last two, video and other electronic media rental and hiring is...
Tell me you don't own a video store.
Yeah,
you'd be looking offloading that fairly fast, wouldn't you?
Wouldn't be worth much.
Current day and this day and age.
And last but not least, which I think is old hat, is photographic film processing.
Mm.
I thought Kodak went out a while ago.
Kodak's already gone.
So there you go. That's the likely demises in the next few years, thanks to the rollout of the high-speed internet thingy that we're currently using. A couple of other interesting notations along the line. With the advent of high-speed broadband, it's going to change the workplace considerably. Now, we've heard it all before, working from home.
How many times have the four of us said to each other over the phone, we need an NBN. How come this is going to take 40 minutes to send to you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You just need to click and drag it now and you have it on your computer.
Yep.
We need it. We need it.
Things like radio stations, presenters, they don't need to come into the radio station. They can have their screen put up in front of them and have all the talkback callers, you know, displayed and have a microphone, have really good quality audio. They don't need to come into work. There's an example. Look at the people that do the voiceover artists for all the film trailers in the United States. They go nowhere near a voiceover studio. They do it all in their bedrooms.
In the comfort of their own homes.
Don't believe me? Have a look on YouTube. Yeah, exactly. So telecommuting is, I think, going to be a big winner in the next little bit. And according to this report, approximately 40% of a household's transport costs can be absorbed into telecommuting. So it'll save you some big bickies down the track. Speaking of big bickies, income. You're looking for a pay rise?
Yes.
We all are, aren't we?
Definitely.
We all are.
How much do you get paid by Tech Talk, Lena? Do you get paid as much as I do?
I do.
Do you?
I do. Oh. In fact, twice as much.
Do you get paid twice as much as me?
Yep.
Graham gets paid three times as much as you.
Yeah.
Yes.
And don't look at me. Andrew gets four times as much as all of us.
Today, the average income is $132,000 per household in the financial year of 2011.
Okay.
That's average income. By 2040, this is likely to be around about $375,000.
Yep.
And in today's money, that's worth about $188,000. So we're slowly getting, we'll be 50, the average household will be about 50K better off in that particular time. 50% higher than in 2011. Not bad.
So just savings from travel and
well, just
running
the
motor vehicles. And
the reason why we're going to get a little bit better off is because our efficiencies are going to be
productivity
up.
And efficiency at home. Yeah.
In working from home, our productivity is expected in 8 hours, we're going to be able to produce probably 50% more work than we do now. So add that into the mix.
Depends on your job, obviously. But some jobs where you have to leave the house, but others where you've got the opportunity to sit down and have a quiet space and be productive in front of a computer, then that's good if you can do that. And if the NBN facilitates that, then that's fantastic.
Absolutely. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Two more points to go. We're talking about this report which came out, which was commissioned by IBM. And once again, you can get on our website, techtalkradio.com.au. It's Australia's Digital Future to 2050. Graham.
Well done, Andrew.
Thank you. I got it. By Ibis World.
People get fussy about the order of words and numbers. And digits, don't they?
No, especially in contracts.
Yeah.
Pedantry.
Here's some interesting statistics.
You say
for
that
you.
One more time, Len, and I'll have to take action.
Can you say it again? I want to see this.
No.
Oh.
No. I'm scared.
Okay. One of the most recent and astounding changes in lifestyle has been due to social networking. Lena is living proof.
Am I?
You are. You are the most
You're alive because of social networking.
Yeah, must be.
You are the biggest tweeter I've ever known.
Well, that's because you don't know many people who tweet a lot.
Not like you.
I'm normal in my tweet circles.
See,
we all
and you're
tweet
perceived
that
to be that, whereas Graham and I perceive us to be normal. Yeah, a few tweets a day, personally, if that.
Yes. I said I'm normal in my tweet circles.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly.
Yeah. It's all relative. Right.
The unique Australian visitors figures for our most popular social media. Unique Australian visitors for 2011. Last year. Guess what was on top of the list?
Twitter.
No.
Oh.
Guess again.
FaceTubes.
Correct. Yes, basically. FaceTubes. Facebook. She threw me there. Facebook.
FaceTubes.
Facebook had 9.8 million unique Australian visitors last year.
Yep.
Right? Second was YouTube at 6.7 million. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of people watching YouTube. Haven't you got better things to do with your time than watching those silly lolcat videos?
Evidently not.
No. Thirdly, which is one which I wasn't previously aware of, Blogspot. Did anyone use Blogspot here?
I used to.
Oh, not for years.
2.2 million.
People still using that.
Apparently so.
Right. I prefer WordPress.
Yeah, well, that's coming to that. Number four was Twitter at 1 million. And number five was your favourite, WordPress. 920,000 unique Australian visitors.
To WordPress.
To social networking sites.
To WordPress sites or to WordPress.com itself?
To WordPress.
Or WordPress.org.
WordPress.org.
They're two different things.
They are.
I suspect it'll be WordPress.com because we're interacting socially with people and that's what we're measuring here.
Yep.
So there you go. That's the social networking side of things. And finally, my favourite.
Oh, WordPress.com is where people have
that's
blogs
where your blog
hosted,
is.
Isn't it?
Yeah, okay, and that's where it'll be measured.
And
gotcha.
Org is where you go for all your support and plugins and all those sorts of things.
In 2011, the most livable cities in the world.
What a dreadful word that is, livable.
Livable.
Who invented that word?
That's I don't know.
It's not a word.
This is unlivable.
I asked a question at work today. What is a livable city?
Melbourne.
Yes, but what is defined as a livable city? Let me be more verbose.
A low crime rate?
Pulled up by Graham over there in the corner for leaving a zero off, swapping it around.
It'd be a very mathematical sort of calculation, wouldn't there? Like Lena's saying, crime rate versus cost of living versus average income versus blah, blah, blah.
You're actually people right. There are 10, there are 10 factors which are taken into consideration for working out the there most livable city, and the top one is safety.
Okay. Safety, yep. Hey, I win.
Safety, stability, tolerance, hygiene, healthcare, education, infrastructure, including public transport, environment, culture, and recreation.
How do you measure tolerance?
How close you sit to Graham. Currently, it's about a foot, 12 inches. It got closer.
Hey, look, Melbourne's now the most livable city because I moved 3 inches to my left.
You guys have been doing your own experiment, this program, on tolerance.
Doing my bit for the country and for the city, yep.
Now, would it surprise you that most of Australian cities are in the top 10?
No.
Doesn't surprise you?
No.
No, it didn't surprise me either. What did surprise me is Tokyo. Tokyo is not in the category of the most livable city. It's the most densely populated city, and that blew me out of the water.
Mm-hmm.
That place is just unreal.
Well, they go up instead of out.
They do. Mm. They do. Anyway, the Auckland came in at number 10. As the this is for 2011, by
Auckland's
the way.
Auckland's a lovely city.
Yeah. Auckland. Number 9 was our wonderful city of Adelaide. Lovely place. City of churches. Very fond over there.
Go Radelaide.
Number 8, says he looking on the list, is Perth.
Yeah, Perth's great.
Hello, Perthites. Did we come to
Perthlings?
Perthlings. That's
Perth-verts.
Right. I knew it was Perth.
It was Perthverts.
Okay. Number 7 is not Australian. It's Helsinki.
Oh,
maybe it's Helsinki. The beer.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
Number 6 in the big scheme of things
This one is surprising.
Sydney.
Sydney's at 6. Sydney.
Really?
Sydney okay. is number 6.
Okay.
Number 5.
Dreadful place.
Mm.
What?
Oh, Graham. Sydney's lovely.
I'm just going to sit here and watch the chat.
Oh, so here it goes.
Here it goes. 30
second delay, so tread water for 30 seconds.
Number 5 was Calgary.
Yes.
Number 4 was Toronto.
Yep.
Good showing for Canada so far.
Yeah, okay, we're down to the top 3.
Vancouver's got to be in there.
Number 3, Vancouver.
There you go.
Okay, that leaves number 2. Come on, punters. What do you think number 2 was?
Something European. There hasn't been much from Europe, except for Helsinki.
Correct.
Oh-ho!
Starts with V. Have a go.
It's not Venice.
No.
Vienna.
Vienna is number 2.
In Austria.
The number 1 most livable city in the world for 2011.
Come on. Is it?
Put us out of our misery.
It's Melbourne.
Yay!
There you go.
I knew it. Because we're awesome. We have so much video game stuff happening.
Is that what it is?
Why. Yeah, that must be why. Because that comes under culture, you see.
Culture.
Culture.
I'd often wondered that.
More culture than a tub of yogurt.
Yeah, that's a lot of culture.
Anyway, very interesting reading. Go and have a download. Have a bit of a look. Work out what industry you're in. Look at how you can capitalise on your future. Look at what your kids have got in front of you.
And be more Melburnian.
Yeah, you'd be like Melburnians, you'd be right. Anyway, written, paid and authorised by Lena Van Deventer.
There's only one way to go when you're at the top of a list like that, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
We're going to have to work hard to stay there.
That's true. That's true. All right, let's change the tack a little bit. This week's View from the Couch.
Ooh.
Adam Turner, specialising in everything that he does best. Time to have a look and compare some handsets, don't you think? There's new ones out there. There's iOS 6 on the way. We'll try and talk about that shortly too. This is what he had to say this week about Samsung, HTC and Apple. Throw them all into the mix and here's the View from the Couch.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch.
After playing with Samsung's impressive Galaxy S3 and the equally impressive One X from HTC, I'm wondering if we're approaching the Android singularity. If you're in the market for a killer Android superphone, right now it really comes down to choosing between the Galaxy S3 and the One X, or perhaps HTC's One XL if you have a thirst for LTE. Samsung is still refusing to confirm or deny whether we'll see an LTE version of the Galaxy S3 in Australia. Even over coffee last week, I couldn't get a straight answer out of them, but if you read between the lines, it looks like an LTE model is on the way. What's really striking about the Galaxy S3 from Samsung and the One X and XL from HTC is how similar they are.
similar to the point where many reviews supposedly of one handset spend a considerable amount of time talking about the other. So little separates them, but it would seem to do both an injustice to talk about one in isolation. In terms of dimensions, you can barely tell them apart. The Galaxy S3 is 0.3 of a millimetre thinner, and its screen is 0.1 of an inch bigger, but the One X is 3 grams lighter. Both rely on the basic same slimline design, both offer razor-sharp 1280 by 720 resolution with similarly impressive picture quality. The choice between LCD and AMOLED screens comes down to personal taste, and I've always favoured LCD, but Samsung's latest Super AMOLED has forced me to reassess that. It can really hold its head high alongside the Super LCD screens favoured by HTC and Apple. Under the bonnet, both these new phones run Android 4.0 Ice Cream Sandwich on a quad-core processor. Plus, they have all the latest mod cons such as near-field communications and Bluetooth 4.0. The S3 definitely packs more grunt. Plus, it has the benefit of a microSD slot. But in the end, what really separates them is the little touches, changes to the ICS interface, and the extra bonus features that the handset makers throw in. Samsung's TouchWiz skin is precociously cute out of the box. It feels like it was designed by a committee of giddy schoolgirls to appeal to giddy urban hipsters. Out of the box, the Galaxy S3 beeps and whistles and tweets at you, and all of the ringtones are horrible music. It's really an annoying phone until you dip in and turn all that rubbish off. I much prefer HTC's more reserved and practical Sense 4.0 skin. Yet in terms of pre-installed apps and the wider ecosystem, Samsung puts HTC to shame. HTC really needs to lift its game here if it doesn't want to become an Android also-ran. So they're both great handsets, although all things considered, the Galaxy S3 comes out slightly ahead and deserves to wear the Android crown for now. Yet so little separates them, unlike the last generation of Android handsets from each vendor. It really feels like we're heading towards an Android singularity in terms of hardware. The Windows Phone 7-powered HTC Titan 4G is also moving towards a similar design, although Nokia has gone its own way with the very nice Lumia range. It will be interesting to see if the iPhone 5 moves in the same sort of direction as the design we've seen from the Samsung Galaxy S3 and the HTC One X. The general consensus is that Samsung's 5.3-inch Galaxy Note phablet has crossed the line. It has its fans, but I don't think such a screen size could ever win mainstream acceptance as a smartphone. So if the Galaxy S3 and the One X and XL are about as big and as thin as it gets, where do we go from here? I wouldn't go any thinner. If anything, I'd say the Galaxy S3 already feels a tad flimsy, and the One X's extra bulk actually makes it feel nicer in your hand. It seems to me that the smartphone war has reached a turning point, and that the ball's really in Apple's court now to see what it does with the iPhone 5. From here in, it will be interesting to see which features actually distinguish the major smartphone rivals.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Tech Talk Games with Lena Van Deventer.
It's finally happened.
What?
I got to play Diablo 3.
Yay! We've waiting for this moment.
How long did it take?
For so long.
It's been about 3 weeks, I think, that I've been good and not played it because I knew that
How could you abstain for such a long period of time?
Because I'm a grown-up and we don't always get what we want.
She's a seasoned professional.
And
is she?
I am a seasoned professional. And I had a
deadline. Isn't your job to review games
No, it's not.
Aware of what's going on in the games industry?
Well, yes, but I don't have to play Diablo 3 to know what's going on in the games industry.
Are you just afraid you'll be addicted to it and you can't put it down?
A little bit. Yeah. A little bit of that. No, I had work that needed to be done before I was allowed to play anything. So I had to be the grown-up and say, you know what? As much as I've been waiting for this game for over a decade, I need to do things that need to be done first. And it's been well worth the wait.
You've enjoyed it by the sounds.
I am enjoying it. There are certain things that I'm taking a little bit of getting used to. I'm still in Act 1. I'm still early on. I'm only a level 9 Demon Hunter, so I've still got a long way to go. So I'm hoping it changes a bit coming up, because there's a few things different to Diablo 2, which was my favourite game in the entire universe, that are not sitting really well with me in Diablo 3. It seems a bit easier in a lot of ways.
Maybe you're a seasoned veteran.
No, it just seems, you don't have to collect, I'm playing a demon hunter, so she uses crossbows to attack. You used to have to collect crossbow bolts when you were, and arrows for when you were had a bow, and you've just got unlimited bolts, so you never have to worry about running out, which is kind of
unlimited
annoying.
Bolts.
Yeah, unlimited bolts.
Okay.
And you've got unlimited scroll of town portal, which is the scroll that you activate to go back to town from wherever you are traversing in the world.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, so you've got unlimited amounts of those, which is kind of a little bit boring.
You used to have to fight for them.
Yeah, you used to have to really try and get them. And
otherwise, you have to walk up or back all the levels, and it'd take you hours
if
you were a long way down.
So it was, but that was half of the thing. It was being stingy with your town portals and holding onto them for when you really needed them and using it as part of your strategy and all that kind of stuff. So I kind of miss that. I also miss the skill points. There's no skill points anymore. The stats auto-distribute. So you've got 5 stat points per level, which you can apply to any stat you like, but in Diablo 2 you got 5 stat points per level, which you could apply to any stat. Now they just automatically unlock as you keep going on, which is a little bit underwhelming.
Mm.
A little bit underwhelming.
What have they got in it that's new or innovative in the Diablo universe?
The classes themselves are mostly new. Barbarian is the same as they always have been, because you can't have a Diablo Diablo game without a barbarian in it, I think. But the Demon Hunter, she's pretty much a cross between the Amazon and the Assassin from Diablo 2, which were my two favourite classes to play. So I loved the fact that this was sort of amalgamated into one character. The way that they attack and the view of it, and it's pretty, and it's, you know, it is amazing, and it is really good. But there's just a few things that I wish were a little bit different. But I'm just going to start upping the difficulty as I go on. So once I get to a level 10, I might go as a hardcore character, which means if I die, that's it. I lose that character. There is no going on from there. You have to create a whole new character and start from level 1.
At the moment, the version that you're playing, if you die, just go back to the town.
You don't even go back to town. You don't even lose your items. In Diablo 2, you used to leave your items with your dead body, and you had to come back without anything and go find your dead body and pick up all your stuff.
Right. How is this challenging compared to the second game?
It's not as challenging as Diablo 2, but having said that, I am early in it still. I'm only a level 9, so hopefully they're just sort of lulling me into a false sense of security before punishing me incredibly hard, and I'm hoping that happens. But there's a few things in there that I'd like to see change. But there's also Inferno class, which Inferno mode, which is another mode of difficulty that might help me a bit. It's
you torch people, do you?
It's
Inferno mode.
No,
nuke them.
It's all monsters have a minimum level of 61, and the level cap's 60. So players, when you're playing in Inferno mode, get to fight against hordes of higher level monsters. So that's something that could make it a bit harder as we go on. But the major difference is there's the auction house, which there wasn't in D2. So you can actually pay real money to get better items and all that kind of stuff, which I'm not sure if I like or not.
An auction house for buying your items, because in the town
eBay,
like,
is
you
it?
Go to the blacksmith or whatever, and you get this and that, and you go to the other stores.
And you used to, flick on Player's 8 and then go in and attack a boss, and you could mess around with the difficulty there, and then get the amazing loot drops from the monsters, and that's how you got your good items. Whereas now you can just buy them.
Lynn, can we just take a step back for the people that have no idea what Diablo is? Can you tell people what it is?
Diablo 3 is the third Diablo game, funnily enough. Diablo 2 came out in...
Doesn't necessarily mean look what Apple did with their iPads.
Diablo is by Blizzard.
Yep.
Who
makers of Warcraft.
Yep, Warcraft and World of Warcraft and Starcraft and Diablo. It's sort of a dungeon crawling hack and slash, I think is what they technically call it.
I like hack and slash.
Hack and slash.
Is it for kiddies?
No. Well,
is it? It's for misspent youth.
Yeah, I'd say, I wouldn't stop your 12-year-old playing it probably, but it is a hack and slash, so don't sit your 3-year-old in front of it.
Is it a download or is it a visit to the shop? while they still
it
exist.
It can be either one.
Yep.
Yep, it can be either one. I got the collector's edition, which I had to
get. Oh, there's flavours, is there?
Yeah, there's different kinds, which the collector's edition came with a book about with the art and a soundtrack. The sound design in Diablo is famously amazing, and it has been through all of the Diablo games. The sound design's been really good. It's got that definite Diablo feel about it with the guitar and just you'd really know the minute you're in there that you're playing a Diablo game. And the collector's edition had the soundtrack in there too, so that's been fun. I've been listening to that when I haven't been able to play it. So even when I'm working, I feel like I'm playing it.
What's it cost?
About $100.
That's all right.
About $100, yeah.
Good value for money by the sense of the amount of hours you'll get playing it.
Oh, definitely, yeah. You'll be in this for a really long time. I've only put a couple hours in and I'm already not... I haven't finished much of the game at all. I've only just killed the Skeleton King, so that's like the fourth big quest, I think. It's the first minor boss, so...
Okay.
I'm still very early in there. The difference is the... Yeah, the that auction house is a massive difference between the first one. And the stat points and the questing is a little bit different as well. It really talks you through every step of your quest, which I kind of don't like. I kind of liked the whole, they give you one objective and you've got to figure out how to get to that objective. Okay. And now they say, first go here, then do this, then do that, then do this, then
so
do that.
So a bit Warcrafty or Starcrafty where it says, you know, mission, you know, do this, achieve this now, and it guides you through what you have to find.
Yeah,
or
it breaks it down into little steps.
Yeah.
And it's like, I just want the main objective and let me get there in my own time, let me do what I want. And, you know, it's almost naggy on the side of the screen.
With the auctioning, just to ask a naive question, mm-hmm. is it an internal currency in the game or is it real world
Linden
currency?
Dollars.
Yeah, or do you actually can you use real money to buy stuff?
I think you can use real money in it. You can use real money in it, but you also use the gold in the game. So I think you can buy a certain amount of gold with real money.
Oh, so they could suck money out of your wallet.
Are you going down this path, Dr. Ron? I sense you might be, just based on your history of previous versions and your line of questioning this evening.
I'm very interested. I'm going to have to look over Lena's shoulder when she's playing it and get a bit of a feel for it. It's just, it's such a time sink.
It sounds like a time waster.
Oh, it is. Right. I mean, you would enjoy it, but an hour or 2 hours just goes past just like that.
One good thing about it was the way that you can have the co-op play. It used to be you had
co-op, two people?
Yep. So, or more. It used to be in Diablo 2, it used to be sort of having a... you'd have a party. It still is called a party, I think, now, which makes it sound so much fun. But you used to, when you took down a boss together with your friends, the loot would drop, and there was sort of a fight over who got the really good items. And normally they only drop one sort of unique or rare or magic item per boss. So it was sort of whoever, you had to sort of fight with each other about who did the most work, who really deserved it. Oh, you get this one, I'll get the next one, you know, blah, 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 blah. But now the gold and the loot are instanced, which means...
No fighting?
There's no fighting. Everyone gets their own. So
that's good.
You can only see the loot that's dropped for you. So you can't, you know, and you take it. So in a different screen, everyone just takes it and they get it. So each person gets it, yeah.
All right.
But yeah, no, it's good, and there's a few different things, and I'll probably do another more detailed update in a couple of weeks when I've had a bit more time with it. But it's definitely different. It does feel like a different game, but it feels like the same game all at the same time.
Dr. Ron, will you or won't you?
A very vague, sorry.
Are you going to look over the shoulder first?
Not just yet.
Not just yet.
I'll
okay.
Over the shoulder, but I'm very tempted.
All right. Yeah. There you go.
It's beautiful. It is beautiful. Like
the animations and the audio is terrific.
I have
isn't
stopped
it?
And gone, oh my goodness, at some of the places that you walk
in. You're playing it on a PC or a Mac?
Mac, on this MacBook Pro.
Okay, yeah. All right, very good.
And it works well.
Thank you. We now know a little bit more. I look forward to the next installment.
Mm.
See if it challenges you a little bit further up the ladder of...
It'll be much better next time, I promise.
Excellent. Are right, you listening to Tech Talk Radio? Last Tuesday, our time, we had the Worldwide Developer Conference happening in San Francisco. One of the big things was iOS 6, the sixth incarnation of Apple's mobile operating system, coming to a device, iPad, iGadget-y sort of thing near you in springtime, apparently. Is that right?
Or now if you want the
Oh, yeah, beta. The beta version.
Mm-hmm.
Beta version.
Beta. You say tornado, I say tornado.
All right, there's a couple of things we should probably gloss over fairly quickly. Tom is not with us tonight or today. iOS 6 maps.
Yeah.
What do you reckon?
Looks fantastic.
So they flipped the bird at Google.
Yep.
They have. They've come up with their own mapping technology.
3D maps, is that right? So yeah, it sort of renders the buildings and things in 3D, and you can zoom in and stuff. And
vector-based. It
looks fantastic.
So you can zoom right in, no loss.
They actually bought it in from somewhere else, didn't they, the map technology, isn't it?
It's Yelps. From Yelp. Yep. Yeah. Yep.
So,
it's great. It looks fantastic.
And it also does navigation? Yep. Visual turns and all that, turn-by-turn navigation, yeah. Real-time traffic updates. Sounds very familiar, doesn't it?
It's
just a different flavour.
It's also Siri's voice giving you the turn-by-turn thing. Oh, really? Nice, yeah.
But what happens if Siri's not available? Like, you know, they speak American Siri in Australia. Are they going to pronounce the names of our streets incorrectly?
Well, you can choose what Siri voice you have.
Yeah. Well, actually, Siri's another thing to talk about. Because I remember when Lyd first had her iPhone in the US, she put it into, I think, the English version because she has an Australian accent.
Mm.
And it certainly worked better from the voice comments, but she lost all of her location-based information because apparently that's only available on US when you got it selected to the US and the US.
The issue was that, you set the language and the location were tied together instead of being separate.
Mm.
So she wanted to be able to speak with a different accent, but because she was actually in the US, and that she needed to use the US locations, and the system tied the two together in an unnatural way.
Mm. I think that was when Siri was still in beta, though. I think she's only
so
just,
that's been
she's
fixed
only,
now.
I think so. I think she's only just come out of beta. So.
Changes in iOS 6 too. Siri understands more languages, works in more countries, and is available on the new iPad. So you can get more things done in more places around the world. iPad and Siri?
When you say the new iPad, you're talking about the next incarnation of the iPad.
I'm assuming we're talking about the one that came out in April this year, which is what we now know as the iPad.
Okay.
The new one, the third generation iPad.
Oh, we can't call it that though, can we?
The third generation iPad.
Okay, we can. Not the iPad 3. That's right. I'll get it right one day. Facebook is now built into the thing as well,
mm-hmm.
for those who really like their Facebook. So
and that looks really nice too. You pull down the notification screen at the top and it's got Twitter and Facebook integration in the notification screen.
Because Twitter's been there for a while, but now Facebook has joined the fray, which is really good. Photo stream sharing. Don't know much about this. Do you use that at all?
No.
Okay. You can share with the photos with just the people you want. You just choose them, apparently, and you can share photos with them. So if I want to share photos with you three guys and you've got iPhones, it's pretty easy to do.
I really liked Passbook. Did you see that?
Passbook, yeah. That was the next one on the list. Your boarding pass, movie tickets, retail coupons, loyalty cards.
It's like an e-ticketing application.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool. The fact that it will, you know, if you get an email ticket, like an e-ticket from if you're going on a flight somewhere, it'll appear in Passbook so you can just quickly go grab it and, yeah. Easily reference it. I thought that was really cool.
That'd be really,
movie
really
tickets?
Is it like when you go to the local cinema now and you buy online and it sends you a QR code and then you go and scan it at the door with the little barcodey thing?
Yeah.
That's not going to work with my wife's cracked iPhone 4 screen, is it?
Have you still not fixed that yet?
No. You need to.
I'm not doing it. She's going to do it. It's her phone.
Presumably, you'll get e-tickets that are sent to you that are like Passbook compliant and they'll be able to be pulled into Passbook and displayed.
Now, here's a killer. FaceTime. Who uses FaceTime?
Me.
My girls do.
But I would use it more if it was over 3G.
Well, yes, you can. Mm. This is
you should say that.
The new version of FaceTime on iOS 6 is now, it used to be locked down to a Wi-Fi network. So if you're at home, you could actually use the FaceTime to communicate with whom you chose on Wi-Fi. This is going to get the telco's noses out of joint a bit, isn't it? If the likes of Telstra, Optus and Vodafone are now fighting for FaceTime for their revenue streams.
Well, I think the telcos have been annoyed at Apple for a while anyway because we can message without text messaging through the telcos.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
So they don't like that either. So this is just the same sort of thing. All right, we'll do it with video.
My understanding was that when FaceTime first came out and it had the Wi-Fi only restriction, it was done very deliberately by Apple so as not to upset Sprint, AT&T, which was the
AT&T
AT&T
and Verizon.
Yes,
main Apple carriers over there.
That's it. So it wasn't taking that business away from them. But it sounds like Apple has now said, well, we don't care. Come on. We need
thing as loyalty.
Exactly. We need to do this. This is an obvious thing which the product needs, and we're going to put it in and make it available. So that's good for FaceTime users.
Mm. iOS 6 adds new calling features to your iPhone, which this one I read about it. I thought, well, I've had this before. I've got an Android phone, and I thought a lot of these features were sort of par for the course, but maybe not.
I didn't
not.
See anything that was new in there. I thought a lot of those things would have been available to iPhone users.
Well, now when you decline an incoming call, you can instantly reply with a text message or set a callback reminder. And when things are just too busy, just turn on your Do Not Disturb, and you won't be bothered by anyone. And I just thought, and you can set it all up based on your contacts. I thought, that would have been just par for the course, but obviously not. iOS 6, here it comes.
Well, the Do Not Disturb thing is sort of, if someone keeps trying to call you when your Do Not Disturb is turned on, they will get through.
Yeah.
Because obviously it's an emergency or something very important.
Yep.
So that's, it's not just sort of turning it on silent or, you know,
yep.
turning it off so you can't be contacted. It's a bit different than that, yeah.
And okay. Can you set an exception to that too? So you can say,
yes.
Do Not Disturb.
Unless you're...
Unless that person calls me and that person can get through.
I think you can, yeah.
Yep.
Mm.
I like the idea of being able to press a button in addition to answer or reject and just say text.
Yeah.
I have a preformed message there. So if Graham rings me but I can't answer, I just hit the button that says text, you know.
In a meeting, can't talk.
In a meeting, can't talk. Ring you back, GC, in 5 minutes or something.
Yep. Yeah, it's cool.
Okay. Mail's taken a bit of a facelift too. The mail client on the actual device. It lets you set up VIP lists. Not unlike what you were just talking about for phone calls.
I would use that a lot.
Never miss important messages from those people who are important to you. And apparently now it's even easier to add photos, videos to email messages and refresh all your mailbox all at the same time with a swipe down, whoop, with the finger.
Whoop.
So there you go. There's a bit of a round robin of iOS. Sounds good.
Yeah.
It sounds good. Now, are you running it on your device?
No, not yet. No,
someone in your household is. Is that?
Yep, my husband is and my housemate is.
Okay.
Mm.
And what are their reactions to it so far? Are they excited about it? Are they going,
No, they like it, yeah. There's been no major bugs or anything breaking or anything like that.
What are the best things about it they like? What's the big difference? What's the thing that's driving them to it?
I think maps is probably what's a big driving force. The map app is really amazing. The 3D thing looks fantastic. Howard's on the chat now. I might see if he's going to answer this. but yeah, I think maps is a great thing. And my husband was saying Passbook was kind of cool because we have a lot of overseas relatives, so we travel a lot. And Passbook was kind of, it seemed like the logical progression to do with all these e-tickets. And now that paper tickets are becoming such a thing of the past, that this just seemed like a logical thing to do. And it sounded vaguely familiar from something we were saying probably this time last year about starting to pay for things with your phone.
Oh, yeah, the near-field stuff. Yeah. You wave it across the top of you.
So it feels like that's almost here, and that felt like such a thing that was so far away last time.
Well, sort of is with the Samsungs and all those sort of things. The Galaxies have got all that stuff built in. So we've got new hardware coming up, allegedly, from Apple very shortly.
Mm.
Maybe.
Well, Elroy's just answered in the chat what he finds good about it. The integration and sharing tabs between Safari on all devices.
So integration with the desktop operating system, which is Mountain Lion.
Mm.
Excellent.
So, yeah, sharing the tabs between Safari on all devices. It's one of those things that I didn't think I wanted to do until I heard that it was something I could do, and I went, oh, that's going to be so handy. sort of like the iPad when that first came out. I was like, I don't need one of those. And then I saw one in action and I went, oh, I need that so bad.
We're really running out of time tonight, but one of the things I want to touch on first, do you remember when the iPads first came out and you saw all those dumb people on YouTube mounting it to the center console of their steering wheel and saying, look, the images rotate as you turn the steering wheel, so you always got the map the right way up.
Yeah.
iPad and Siri and navigation becomes a car-mounted device. Here comes the reality. If you take it, mount it on your dashboard, and suddenly you have a voice-driven connected navigation computer thanks to Apple's new Map app. Some people already use iPads on the road for GPS purposes, but they expect that number to grow. So iPad's going to become a really big... It's like the Melways or the Sidways or the Brizways in the car.
That's going to be a big car kit to fit your iPad in.
Damn right.
That'd be cool, though. I reckon that'd be cool.
wouldn't fit in my car.
And obviously hands-free devices now with the iPad with Siri on board and all that, so you'd be able to...
Perhaps you could put the iPad up on the windscreen and use its camera so you actually look at the iPad instead of looking at the road.
Why don't you just have a heads-up display and be done with it?
Well, use it as a heads-up display, so virtual reality, so it imposes images over what you would see anyway.
I'm just thinking how much work...
I'm being very silly, but...
No, that's cool. How much work would there be in reversing the image such that you could just drop it on the dashboard, and then when you looked at the reflection was the right way round in the windscreen?
Oh, there'd be no work in doing that at all. You just have to make sure that use it with bright white text on a very black background or something.
Change the mode, go into heads up display mode, and cool.
Yeah.
Good. Anyway, sorry.
I'm not even going to go there. I was going to talk about handheld devices in cars whilst mobile, but I'm not going there.
Putting the iPad to your ear.
Yeah, absolutely.
How about I'll get iOS 6 by this time next week.
Do it.
Bring it in.
I'll tell you what good I like radio. About it.
Absolutely. Just to rattle through a few things that we sort of said we'd mention tonight. A very early Apple One computer, one of Steve Wozniak's first, well, it was his first actually, has been sold at an auction for $374,500. Not bad if you were collecting them, really, was it? It's a pretty good thing. The price is more than double than Sotheby's highest estimate and set a new record for the collector's item.
Wasn't a former TikTok radio panelist, was it?
Doesn't it say.
It could have been, actually, yes.
It doesn't say, but it wouldn't surprise me, yes. He's
an Apple Hello, enthusiast.
JD, if you're out there and listening.
An enthusiast? Mm. Enthusiast is not the word.
Obsessive?
Yeah, as well.
Yeah, exactly. In other news, the Federal Communications Commission, FCC, in the United States is potentially opening up plans to check out another inquiry as to whether mobile phone radiation is dangerous to human health. Also this week, one of the things which we talked briefly about at the beginning of the show, Dr. Ron, smartphone app and QR codes let you wirelessly withdraw cash from an ATM.
Yeah, that's clever.
Saves you having to put the PIN number in. Now, the way this system works is that on the ATM, obviously, instead of where it says insert PIN number here, through an app on your device, whatever you're using, an iPhone or an Android device, the ATM will show you a QR code. Instead of requesting you to put a PIN, you scan it with your phone through the internet app and magically, behold, it says, oh, yeah, that really is you, Doctor, and I'll give you some cash.
Mm.
Interesting concept, isn't it?
So you hold the QR code up to the ATM.
Well, you hold your phone up to the to the ATM and snap the QR code.
And says, okay, I know that.
And then the app in your phone talks to the bank. QR code. Okay. And it says, yeah, this is you, this is us, we're happy, let's exchange cash.
So anyone cute, who steals your phone can empty your bank account as
you
well.
You may also need a PIN number at some stage to unlock your phone and all that sort of stuff. I don't know how that works, Graham, but I'm sure that they've thought about it.
Sounds like a really bad idea to me.
Oh, okay.
It would be clever if the QR code was generated dynamically and you went up to the bank and it sent it to you. The bank sent it to you, to your phone, and you held your phone up.
Yeah, well, that could be a way, but I don't know whether that. Don't think that because it says in the article that there's no extra hardware required for the ATM.
That would require the ATM to have a camera to read the QR code. It's doing it the other way around. It's displaying the QR code on the ATM screen
because it's easy.
And then the app in the phone is reading the QR code and then sending that round back to the bank.
Oh, is that how it's working?
Yeah.
Oh, that was the other way around.
No.
Oh, you've completely confused me now.
Okay, well, we'll move on, shall we?
I'm going to stick with the PIN number next.
Apple are looking like in the next version of iTunes to be pushing out podcasting.
Yeah, they're going to get rid of podcasting
from iTunes.
Within iTunes. Yeah, so they're going to a separate podcasting app.
Yeah, they're going to make a new app for us all to download just to say no more podcasting in iTunes. Don't know why.
Because it'd be easier to find them and you'll have better search terms that are more relevant to podcasting.
Really? Is that what you reckon?
I think so. I think, more meta.
Isn't it just another app to download and everyone will go, oh, I can't be bothered, I don't do podcasting anyway? Da, da, no. Da. Whereas at the moment it just comes up in search?
No, I think. It'll have more metadata and more information about the podcast because at the moment, if you're in iTunes searching for a podcast, it can be quite difficult to try and find exactly what you're looking for. So, yeah, I think giving it its own little app could be a good idea, especially if they offer something in there to listen to them on, some sort of, I don't know.
It's fairly basic at the moment, the podcasting module or component of iTunes.
Yeah.
There's a search field. You can click and drag them into your device if you've got them there, but it's fairly basic otherwise, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I mean. I think I'd like them to go a bit more in depth with it. I think give it a real put the spotlight on it and really
okay,
go in a bit more in depth. That could be cool.
All right, I've got so much to other things here tonight. Let's touch briefly on this. Skype, are you a user of Skype at all when your family and friends are overseas?
Yes.
Graham, you're probably a user of Skype. Do you use it a lot?
Every week.
Very occasionally.
Yeah. What do you reckon about having ads served up to you whilst using Skype now on your computer?
Don't have to worry about it. Mac user. Lol.
Well, the client Well, Skype's a Microsoft product now. You've got to bear that in mind too. To try and recoup costs, get a revenue stream out of Skype, more the point. Microsoft are actually now, or Skype are now actually going to put ads up. When you know the just window that you have on your computer where it says you're talking to and the photo comes up, next to that person's photo is going to be an ad if you're a subscriber of nothing. Like if you don't have any other, you know, call credits or anything like that.
Skype credits, Skype app credits.
Yeah. Recent versions of Windows Live Messenger, which is the text-based messaging system from Microsoft, have ads at the bottom of the chat window as well.
Okay.
So,
intrusive ads.
Hello, FaceTime.
Yeah.
And through,
exactly.
Through clever use of the host's file, you can get rid of them.
Yes, that's true too, isn't it? That's a story for another day. Nokia, however you'd like to pronounce it, depending on which side of the river you're on.
Nokia.
10,000 staff to go.
The Fairfax of mobile phones.
There it is.
Absolutely. 10,000 staff.
Too soon.
Sorry.
But they're only getting rid of... Fairfax are only getting a fifth of what Nokia are getting rid of.
Oh, dear.
Nokia are getting rid of. They're only 10,000. But anyway, they're feeling the pinch. They teamed up with Microsoft, and they just don't have the get-up that they used to have these days in respect to their brands and their hardware and stuff like that. So, although someone was saying, I was reading, I can't remember where, whether it was an email or something like that, they're very popular in some countries still, more the, I think, African countries and stuff like that. They tend to, they don't have the smartphone technologies that we tend to here, probably because they don't have the smarts in the network. So, analysts are also predicting that whilst Nokia is down, it's going to keep going down until some miracle happens down the track. So I wonder if they are, as Graham says, going to become the Fairfax of mobile phone technology. Time for a change for them, maybe.
All right. Just to go back to what we're talking about with iTunes before, Elroy's just brought up an interesting point in the chat room. He says the podcasting app will be part of the operating system. You won't need to download anything extra.
That's good to know.
Yeah, Apple apps are automatically in the OS.
Yeah. Mm. Now, just very, very, very briefly, Lena, E3 came and went the other day. There was no mention of a new games console for Microsoft, but yet there's leakages happening in the internet. Are these substantiated, founded, or whatever?
I'm a bit sus on this one.
Yeah?
Yeah, because the code name, like the development name for the next gen console from Microsoft has been Durango for about 18 months to 2 years that we've known about that. So if it was a leak about Durango, you'd expect the word Durango to be on it somewhere.
Although, I'll throw this into the mix.
Ooh.
The document purports to date back a couple of years to August 2010. And it calls itself the Xbox 720.
Yep.
Yeah.
And in the movie Real Steel, I think that was a Hugh Jackman movie, it was set in the future where robots fight each other. And in one of the rings where the robots were fighting each other, there were sponsorship banners all around the ring.
Well, sounds like a conspiracy theory.
And there is an Xbox 720 ad.
Oh, okay.
No.
In the movie.
Are you serious?
Yeah. So okay. that's
who
another
funded
one.
The movie?
Yeah, probably
was,
Microsoft.
Yeah, well, exactly. Maybe they knew something.
Or was it just some Xbox fan joke,
that's
a mock-up
thing.
Of something.
Microsoft have come out and said, we can neither confirm nor deny we had anything to do with that.
Now, Graham, you were saying there's a Microsoft announcement coming up very shortly, but we don't know what it's about.
No, they've scheduled a press conference for Monday their time in Los Angeles, not in...
San Fran.
Not in San Fran or Silicon Valley, and it's actually scheduled for 8:30 a.m. Tuesday, our time, because it's always yesterday in America, as we know.
They can't
unfortunately,
catch us, can they?
No. Unfortunately, we're not going to know what that's about before we finish recording the show today. So if you are listening to this on a day after Tuesday, on one of the other stations or on the podcast, yeah, hit the tech web news sites on the web, and you might find out what that's going to be about. It'll probably even be in the Tech Talk Radio Twitter feed and all that sort of stuff. So
highly likely. All right, Tech Talk Radio's Odd Spot Gadget app and website of the week coming up after this.
Listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
The Big T announced its prices for the National Broadband Network.
Ah!
And that's a risk you have to be aware of and you have to be prepared to take.
So you've unnecessarily highlighted that awkward part of the conversation.
DLC stands for downloadable content.
Yeah, that's what it gives you if you've already got the toolbar.
I want a portal gun.
I want a portal gun.
Telstra need to take more safeguards so that one piece of equipment can't take down a network.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Thanks to regular contributor GJ for this week's gadget, the laser...
GJ McN.
The laser universal Bluetooth stereo headset from Officeworks. GJ says, I needed a new headset when my old Motorola met an unfortunate end at the hands of my hands. These are the cheapest I have seen around. They have reasonable with good volume sound and are stylish. I work with them on and they adjust, but can slip if you tilt your head too much, owing to gravity. But sitting and walking, they are fine, kind of shaped like the old Stax ones. No trouble pairing, he says.
They're very unique.
That's how you connect it into other things. You pair them.
Yeah. Yeah.
With the 0000 password or 1234.
They have one button push to answer, volume and skip buttons.
Okay.
GJ says, I like them so much, I've got another pair for my daughter, and now my wife wants a pair as well. I have no connection to Officeworks at all, just another stationary nut, he says.
Oh. I was in Officeworks today.
They're about $38, getting them from Officeworks.
It is cheap.
Not so bad.
Yeah.
That's it, guys, Andrew, the laser universal Bluetooth stereo headset.
Here it is, everybody, the world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
Now, during the course of the week, I had course to try and find a good audio metering VU meter for my PC because I wanted to see the fluctuations of sound coming into my device and I wanted to see it accurately. And I thought, my goodness, someone must have actually come up with a good metering system that you can just plug onto a PC, a proper one. And I found it and it's located at minorshill.co.uk, minorshill.co.uk. Here you can find a whole heap of different metering, which is set up to BBC standards. And it's got all sorts of multi-track metering. It's got applause meters. It's got graphical meters. And they're all free. You just download them, run them up on your PC, and it'll show you accurately. You can calibrate and do all sorts of other things like that. Calibrate your metering so that you can actually know when you're overdriving your sound card. Isn't that a good idea?
Interesting. Good for audiophiles.
Does it include a proper VU meter? A proper VU meter is a very rare thing.
It has a thing that looks like a VU meter on it.
Lots of things look like a VU meter, but...
Have a read of the specs and draw your own conclusions on that. But yes, I hear what you're saying with movements and things like that. So, but have a check. Anyway, that's our website of the week, minorshill.co.uk, for everything in audio. Woo-hoo!
Tech Talk Radio, app of the week.
Hello to Freak, and thank you, Freak, for your suggestion for the application. Droid Stats Call Cost Monitor. On the forum, Freak says, hi guys, over the past few months, I've had a continuing argument with Telstra over their website. I try to keep track of our call caps so we don't exceed them. And if you've ever logged on and tried viewing your usage stats, brings up a form showing all of your calls to the various numbers, but completely out of order, with no way of ordering it.
Oh, it's atrocious, the Telstra website, isn't it, when it comes to that?
It is. The app I found is called Droid Stats. It has various settings which you can alter depending on your plan, and you can enter costs, call cost caps, and set up a warning for when you're nearing your call cap. Droid Stats also monitors SMS and data usage too. I think it's fantastic, and it even takes into account free calls. It does. I think it's an awesome app for anyone who frequently hits their call caps.
Oh, yeah, it's on AppBrain. It looks good.
Tristan. Yeah, so check that one out. That's the app of the week, Droid Stats Call Cost Monitor.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
Ma, the meatloaf!
Bon. Jeremy Bon.
You can't handle the truth!
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
New legislation has been passed in Ethiopia that could imprison an individual for up to 15 years for making a 30-second call over Skype or Google Talk.
What?
The legislation has made it illegal to use any voice over internet protocol services from within the country. Not only does the law prohibit the use of VoIP services, but it also enables the state-owned Ethio Teleco.
That's the key. The government owns the telco.
Yeah, to prohibit the use of video chat, social media, email, and any other data transfer service capable of communicating information. The legislation has been labelled as necessary for the country's national security and will reportedly close a loophole that was allowing some citizens to communicate without being monitored by authorities. Fancy being able to communicate without being monitored by authorities. It's our odd spot, Andrew. If you go to Ethiopia, don't Skype.
Or you're... How does a tourist go over there? Not that they probably have a lot of tourists, but if imagine that, you know.
I do.
I would very strongly recommend complying with the local laws in a place like that. You don't want to end up in the wrong end of the legal system.
No. I bet you people wouldn't know it when they rocked up if they're tourists.
No.
Or two of them.
This is the sort of stuff they should have on the Smart Traveller website, the government one.
No, you've got to get it here on Tech Talk Radio.
You're first on Tech Talk. Yeah, that's our odd spot. There you go.
And that's our show for the week. Thank you, Linesman. Thank you, Ball Boys and Ball Girls. It's been good.
If you didn't know, we have an email newsletter that comes out every week. Just hit the Tech Talk Radio homepage and subscribe to our email newsletter.
Yes.
It gives you a heads up on what we're going to talk about and gives you a little bit of
talk about. I've got a swag of documents here that I haven't even touched tonight.
We're going to get through half of it.
Absolutely. All right, so be sure to join us the same time on the station that you're listening to now or in the podcasting arena where you're downloading us from right now. So until then, contact us. Send us emails. We love them. We read them out. Not all of them, but most
ones.
Of them. Nice ones.
Nice ones.
We only get nice ones. We've got nice listeners. Till next week, it's bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellists Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by GC Support and Shaq West. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and around the world that broadcast the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. Contact us for the two-hour version or access the one-hour show on the Community Radio Network. Visit cbaa.org.au for further details. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03-8682-9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. Don't forget you can follow the panellists on Twitter, join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk Radio chat, and solve your issues on the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.